Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Happy Friday, St. Louis. I'm Michael Kelly.
I'm John Hancock, and it is a happy Friday. It's lovely out there right now. It's about to be not so.
It's not bad. So let me ask you this, because I am weird this way, and I'm curious if you fall into this category.
News. Yes.
Hypothetically, we have, pretty strong summers in St. Louis. It can get pretty hot and
gets
sustained.
A little toasty out there.
And, we'll get our little burst of winter, right?
Gets a little chilly out there.
And this next week, we're going to be living through this below zero stuff.
Yeah.
Would you rather have 2 weeks of below zero weather where you're staying at home and you're got the fireplace going, you're having dinner with Georgianne, or 2 weeks in the middle of the summer where it's 110 degrees with humidity, at nighttime it stays into the 90 degrees, you're sweating anytime you're outside.
Give me the cold.
Ditto. Ditto, ditto, ditto. I would totally take this too. Now look, I'm not saying that I love this 2 weeks. I'm going to hate it, when we're going through below zero weather.
Give me the cold.
But it's so much better than just being when you walk outside at 6 in the morning and you already start sweating because it's so hot.
You probably don't realize this because you're never here.
Oh, stop it.
But St. Louis is great because you get all four seasons.
Sometimes in the same week.
Yeah, right. And it's I love the changing of the season.
So this morning I woke up, I had this belief that it was going to be 0 degrees this morning when we woke up. So I got all bundled up. I've got a jacket on. I went outside, John.
It's lovely.
It's balmy out almost. Yeah. It's 50 degrees. Did you prepare for the cold?
I always prepare for the cold, Michael. I got a scarf that I brought with me. I got a hat in the car in case, because you lose a lot of heat through your bald head when you're bald.
Yeah.
So I'm prepared.
We're here celebrating an anniversary together, Hancock and Kelly.
Yes, we are. 15 years on The Voice of St. Louis.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, I can believe it.
How long have you and I been friends? About 20 years or so?
Yeah.
We really became friends once
here.
We started hanging out here.
That's right.
But can you believe it's been 15 years?
Yeah. I 15 of the, some of them were some of the best years of my life, and some of them were some of the worst years of my life.
Yeah, no doubt. And it just was crazy. This morning we walk in. And they're on the big television screen. They're always like, welcome special guest Bob Costas. Welcome, so-and-so. Hey, Steve Moore has been with KMOX for 23 years. And, there's never been anything about, hey, Kelly and Hancock are here. We were there this morning.
Anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Not bad to be us.
Not bad.
What else you want to talk about?
Well, I don't know. If he were alive today, January 12th.
Uh-huh.
John Hancock would be 277 years old. Happy birthday, Uncle John.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Is that right? How come you would have thought that somebody who's named John Hancock would spend time to try to have the calligraphy ability of John Hancock?
Oh, I can do it.
Oh, brother, come on. I've seen you sign your name. It don't look anything like John Hancock.
No, because you try and do that on a check and see what happens. But I can do it. When push comes to shove, I can replicate that signature.
So this will probably be the last rush hour for a couple of days without ice on the ground.
Yeah, that's no good.
Mike Miller hosts the Garden Hotline, Saturday mornings at 8 on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey, you're listening to The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. You can hear us on 1120 AM or 98.7 FM. Of course, you can always download the Odyssey app.
Yeah.
You can rewind, listen to all the beautiful commentary that you're going to hear from Hancock.
Commentary.
That comes from a British word.
Yeah.
Is it? British words are far prettier than Americans, are they not?
They can be, all right.
So you can also see us Sunday mornings, 8:30, Fox 2 with Andy Banker, Hancock and Kelly, the television show. John Hancock, this coming week.
Monday, tomorrow, the next Monday.
This coming Monday, a big day, the start of the presidential campaign season. Iowa, the first of them all, starts, and this is the slide towards November. It's going to be below zero in Iowa. Mm. Nikki Haley has suspended all in-person campaigning in Iowa. So she's going all in on New Hampshire. She's essentially surrendering Iowa.
Right.
It's left it to Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor DeSantis, and, of course, Donald Trump. Donald Trump, who hadn't spent much time in Iowa, has been there consistently the past week or so. What do you anticipate we're going to see?
Well, the cold weather is going to bode well for the candidate that's got the most support and the deepest support, and that's Donald Trump. So I think he's going to do well. I mentioned this on TIAM this morning, that I just don't get the sense that Ron DeSantis' support is that passionate out there. And when you've got shallow support levels and you get a bad weather election day, and this is what it's going to be on Monday in Iowa, that spells trouble. So I think DeSantis runs a very high risk of underperforming in Iowa, and that may spell the end of his campaign because he's not really trying in New Hampshire.
Well, it will be interesting to see if he throws the towel in that quickly. I mean, he's gone through $150 million. He had a super PAC. He had a 50-state strategy to try to win this election. They had been investing in some of the other states heavily, North Carolina, Michigan, Ohio already. They had a consultant meltdown about 2 weeks ago. It just appears as though that the guy who had everything lined up to be the challenger to Donald Trump winds up falling flat on his face. Could it be, John, because he's trying to be Donald Trump? He's not set himself out really that differently. Now, he had a record to point to from Florida, but at the end of the day, he was pushing this MAGA agenda, and why drink Diet Coke when you can get the real thing?
Yeah, and I think if you look at his governing of Florida and the rhetoric and some of the positions he's taken, I mean, he comes as close to being a populist as Donald Trump is, and that's his governing style. So he takes that into the campaign, but he's opposing Donald Trump, and he really was very reluctant to criticize Donald Trump at any point. And you get what you get. And then, I don't think he's a very good candidate, certainly at the retail level.
Hey, before we move on, there was another debate this week. It was just Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
I don't think either of them really hurt themselves that much. Ron DeSantis didn't move the needle. Nikki Haley continued to show a command of the ability to be able to communicate, and I think she won the debate. Your thought?
Yeah, I thought they both of them fundamentally mishandled their approach to the debate. And, if I were managing one of those campaigns, and you're going to have a situation where it's just you and your opponent going up on stage together, and there's a front runner out there who's not going to be on the stage, I would have gotten on the phone with my opponent's campaign manager and said, hey, look, there's a 1% chance that one of us is going to be the nominee. it makes no sense to go after each other here. We need to focus our fire on the front runner and tell people why he shouldn't be the Republican nominee. Had they done that, it may not have made any difference ultimately, but it would have been a far better approach and strategic decision than what they ended up doing, which was shooting at each other.
The only voice in the Republican primary that's really done his whole campaign targeting Donald Trump, saying that he's not fit for office, has experience with him, is Chris Christie, the former governor of New Jersey. He suspended his campaign this week.
Yeah, he's done. That was just never going to happen. He was upside down. His favorable rating was about half as high as his unfavorable rating, and that's a recipe for disaster. And he just wasn't going to win. And I think, that full-on go-after-Trump message, it certainly didn't work for Chris Christie. But you can't beat the front runner unless you tell people that the front runner is not the best option. And you've got to convince people of that. He couldn't do it.
Well, maybe the courts will. Moving on, we've got the Speaker of the House this week, John. It's Mike Johnson. He was the replacement to Kevin McCarthy, as you'll realize. He was, Matt Gaetz and that whole team really liked him. Well, guess what Mike Johnson did? He went and did what you're supposed to do in government and found a way to compromise with the Democrats. It may cost him his speakership. They're already wanting to pull this guy out of being the speaker. Is there any serious people left in the Republican Party?
Oh, they're there. But what you've got is a small number. And when you've got a two-seat majority, you know, you can't afford, if you've got a handful of renegades, you got trouble. And they've got this, still have this rule where one member can bring a motion to vacate the chair. And that's what happened to Kevin McCarthy. And that one Republican with another couple of Republicans and all the Democrats can remove the speaker. I don't think that's going to happen here, but it certainly could.
It's unbelievable. Hey, by the way, I wonder, you're a historian. Is he our shortest Speaker of the House? I can't remember anybody being, I mean, John Boehner wasn't a big dude, but this guy's an awfully small fella.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Clarence Cannon, Missouri's only House Speaker, was that tall.
Yeah.
But I don't know the answer to the question you asked.
We were in a whisker of having another Missouri Speaker. It never came to fruition. I worked hard at it.
Dick Gephardt. Yeah. He was the minority leader for how many years?
20-something years.
Wow.
So here we are, John. We have Mike Johnson, who's facing this internal struggle with the far right of his party. He's from the far right. They're not happy with him. We're not immune from that here in Missouri. The Republicans have a stranglehold on government. They have a veto-proof majority down in Jefferson City. The Missouri Senate, which is where most of the important action takes place, seems to be headed towards another session of being able to accomplish nothing because there's this group similar to the Matt Gaetz group out there in Washington, D.C., that calls themselves the Freedom Caucus, represented by a Bill Eigel, a Bob Onder, etc., from the St. Louis area, both from St. Charles.
Well, Bob Onder's not there anymore.
One time he was the Freedom Caucus. But they find themselves now in Jefferson City, essentially acting the same way the extreme right caucus in Washington, D.C. was acting. This looks like we are headed towards a legislative session in Missouri where we're going to watch the traditional Republicans and the MAGA Republicans go at it.
A couple of thoughts here. You know, there's been this divide in the Republican Senate caucus for quite some time now in Missouri. And, you know, I kind of reject the proposition that there's a conservative group of Republicans and a moderate to liberal group of Republicans. They're all conservative.
True that.
But the Freedom Caucus, so-called, tends to be more strident and more willing to make their points than to pass legislation.
Not move towards compromise.
Yeah. And that's a prerogative to do so. But, you know, it causes a dysfunction. And where you have no leadership that is capable of putting together a majority to get stuff done, it just hampers the whole process. We've seen it in Washington, D.C., and we've seen it in Missouri. It's just now become formalized. They've joined the Freedom Caucus nationally and are part of that network now.
But it's particularly going to be even more of a crazy show this year because guess what? Because of the infinite wisdom of the Republicans, we have term limits in the state of Missouri, which means all these people are now running against each other. About 12 of them are running for governor or lieutenant governor or attorney general. So they have to go out there and far right and act a fool each other that makes it even worse.
Well, there are a lot of members of the state Senate that are running for higher office, and that does complicate things, no question about that. And, yeah, term limits have not had the effect that I think a lot of people had hoped, that it would cause government to work better. That's certainly not been the case. So, yeah, I think you're gonna see some dysfunction.
Do you ever reflect on all the policies that you helped push as a youngster, whether it had been term limits, NAFTA, GATT, and some of the trade agreements that now the Republican Party is the exact opposite of, and wonder, maybe we just had it all wrong before. Do we have it wrong again?
Yeah, I don't know. Parties changed. The Republican Party has changed. It's become much more nationalistic and populistic than it is conservative. And, you know, at some point 30 years down the road, it'll change again into something else, I would imagine. Democrat Party's in the process of changing itself. So I think that some of that's just a natural progression of what happens in American politics. But, it's been a problem. You know, when I was in the legislature 35 years ago, our caucus, and we were in the minority party, so it's easier.
Right.
But our caucus stuck together through everything. I mean, we were, and we had different, you know, philosophies. Heck, when I was there, they were actually liberal Republicans, like
right.
Really liberal.
Oh, I remember.
And, But we stuck together on things, and you know, and we're able to accomplish a little bit as the minority. And you just don't really see that happening in government anymore. And I kind of lament the fact that those days are gone.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We saw a complete, I don't know what you'd call it, a theater that took place in Washington, D.C. with Hunter Biden showing up at the committee hearing where they were trying to hold him in contempt. I thought it was an incredible political jousting move that he showed up. At the same time, it really puts a spotlight that we are just evolving to chaos.
Yeah. I mean, from a public relations standpoint, that was a good move because, you know, they'd been talking about the committee subpoenaed him to appear behind closed doors, which is very common in Washington. And he said he wouldn't do that, but he would appear in public. And that was a kind of the talking points back and forth. But to physically show up, I think he scored some public relations points there. But at the end of the day, he's got some serious indictments hanging over his head.
He's a bad dude. Yeah. He deserves to be. But I mean, it's hard to believe that they're making him look good, but he's using their own rhetoric against him. Hey, that's John Hancock.
Yo.
I'm Michael Kelly. We're going to be with you all the way till 11 o'clock. Chris Ranji, who still works here, will be coming in because Amy, who knows where she's at? She's not here. It's Hancock and Kelly. More after this right here on Camo X.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, we don't agree on much, but I think we may agree on this next thing.
Yeah?
We both have spent time at the caucuses in Iowa.
Yes, we have.
And I think we both hope we never have to go there again.
Yes, we do.
It is the coldest place I have ever been in my life,
yeah,
Iowa.
It's a miserable evening. They should do it on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. So I spent, John, as you know, 2.5, 3 years of my life running around with Congressman Gephardt when he was running for president. And a big component of that was the Iowa caucuses.
And he was supposed to win the caucuses.
Dick Gephardt won the caucuses in 1988. His whole strategy was to win in 2004, to win Iowa and then build that momentum. Yep. He was expected to win Iowa, neighboring state, et cetera. It did not go well. And in fact, he wound up finishing third that night. It was a story between Howard Dean and Howard Dean went at each other. Howard Dean wound up having that night. Remember that? Yelled. That night.
Tanked his campaign.
Yeah. And John Kerry won the Iowa caucuses and essentially wound up being anointed as the Democratic nominee. Mr. Gephardt flew home the next day, announced that he was surrendering political life, etc. But that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is the Iowa caucuses. And people need to understand it's unique, unlike anything that you've ever done. We're typically used to going and voting, right? We show up. We got our little ID there, our little tag. We show up. We'd like to vote. We vote. We go home, back to work, whatever the case may be. That's not the case with the caucuses. With a caucus, you have to show up at a set time. I think it's 7 p.m. For your precinct, and you show up there in a gymnasium. Someone will from the party, because this is a party-run structure, will stand up in front of the caucus and say, "Okay, we're going to get started. Everybody who's with Ron DeSantis, go to this corner. Everybody who's with Donald Trump, go to that corner. Everybody who's with Vivek Ramaswamy, and so on." And the room divides up. And this particular caucus may only have one delegate. They could potentially, if they're at a big school or a big precincts, they could have two or three delegates that they would be dispersing. And so what they do is then they come down and they come to find out who's viable. So you may have 20 people that go into the corner for Donald Trump and 10 people who go in for Ron DeSantis, and Vivek Ramaswamy has 5, but Chris Christie has 1.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, then, under whatever rules are laid out, Chris Christie's not considered to be viable. So that one person is now open after the first vote to be enticed by the other caucus members to come join our caucus. And so the Donald Trump people will come over and talk to the Chris Christie people and the et cetera. And then they will have another separation, if you will, of the voters. And we continue to go through this process until we come to what is a fair representation of what in the allocation of these delegates. You've worked this.
Yeah.
everything I just described to you happens over about 2 or 3 hours.
Well, you forgot the miserable speeches.
Yeah.
Everybody has a representative that gives a miserable speech at the caucus, and you got to sit through that. So, I mean, you worked the whole start to finish.
I did. Well, I was with the candidate at that time, but, I mean, what they've been spending all their time doing right now in Iowa, John, is they're essentially running around doing the same thing 12 times a day. They're going to different little coffees. And what you need to understand about the voters of Iowa is they're absolutely spoiled little brats. None of them, you will meet them. They will meet the president of the United States, could come into their house, literally sit down with them and ask them, could I have your support? Well, you know, Mr. President, I was with you last time, but I kind of want to hear what Robert Kennedy has to say before I make my final decision. That's what these people do. It is not unheard of nearly every person in Iowa who wants to be involved in the political process has met these candidates. And so I wasn't with the candidate, but what one we would do in these meetings is we were also training people on how to caucus. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to recognize those team leaders who can be in different places. It is a massive undertaking that goes down. And like you said, I blocked out the speeches because are you really going to be wooed?
Yeah.
But the interesting part is after the first round, when you find out who's viable and not viable, and it's rules laid out by the party that determine that. And then it essentially becomes your lobbying your neighbor, your friend, your relative to say, hey, I'm sorry it didn't work out for Chris Christie.
Well, that's the thing.
Come on over here.
These people know each other.
Totally.
They live in the same community.
And some of these caucuses, John, are in people's garages.
Yeah.
I mean, it is obviously in the big cities of Des Moines and, et cetera. It's being taken place in a school or at a gymnasium. Mm. But it literally can be in a neighborhood in somebody's garage.
Yeah. So my experience, I was on the Romney campaign in 2008, the time he wasn't the nominee.
Right.
And I was on the finance team. We were fundraising, but Iowa was one of my states. And so the entire Romney apparatus got called into duty. And in my case, it was the last week or so in Iowa. And what was amazing to me, and this was in 08, so you didn't really have social media, wasn't really much of a factor at that point. But we had on our computer system there, we knew, I think, every single one of our caucus people that were going to be Romney people were noted.
Oh, yeah.
In the database.
Totally.
And then you continue to call up to the last minute the folks that you have as undecided on your list and try and convince them to go caucus for Romney. And you're building your list and building your list and building your list. And then at each one of these little caucuses, you've got a campaign representative there.
Right.
So I was at one of them. I it was in Des Moines. I can't remember,
whatever.
I tried to block it out, too.
Yeah.
But I'm in the room, and you meet the Romney captain there, and they're gathering up people. And, yeah, it's what was remarkable to me, and it makes sense, because when you go vote here in St. Louis, if there's a line, there's a good chance you're going to know 3 or 4 people in line because they're your neighbors.
Uh-huh.
And here, these people all knew each other. And, they'd come in and they'd slap each other on the back and have a conversation. And they'd, and they'd try and cajole them over.
Yeah, and it's important people remember this is a several-hour process thing. This is not quick.
No, you're making a real commitment.
Yeah, you are committed for the entire evening. And it's going to be below zero. And I told you, this is the coldest doggone place I've ever been.
Yeah.
Iowa, because there's nothing blocking the wind. There's nothing there. It's just people and farmland, unless you're in the big city. But it's so cold. And I just wonder how that's going to work out for even Vivek Ramaswamy. I mean, Donald Trump seems to have this built-in institutional support of just people who followed him since the previous election. I just don't see people being able to make those sacrifices for, and by the way, there is nothing more heartbreaking as someone who works these caucuses when Bill, who had told you he was going to come caucus for your candidate, shows up and you see him in the corner for your opponent.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Well, the one thing about, and I'm not intimately involved in any of these campaigns this cycle for president, but the one thing that I do wonder about, I don't have a sense that the Trump campaign infrastructure
exists.
So I don't know that they've got a war room there that's staffed by paid
I can't imagine.
People. Right. And so it's, and he's run such a non-traditional campaign the last two times. And it is possible, I suppose, that the Trump campaign is looking at the polling data and has no real idea of exactly who is going to caucus for him.
I would bet it.
And so if that's the case, and Iowa almost always has some kind of a surprise. If that's the case, something shocking could, I don't expect it, I'm not predicting it, but something shocking could happen on Monday if, and I don't know what the status of the Haley campaign or the DeSantis campaign is in terms of its ground operation, but if they've got one and it's good and they've got good people and they deploy them, you could have a real upset here.
You could. And by the way, an upset is not only defined by winning. It could be coming in second place. Haley has surrendered Iowa.
Yeah.
If suddenly the momentum nationally that seems to be taking place, she comes up second in Iowa,
yeah,
and that rockets her.
And if it's, you know, 42 to 34, mm-hmm. something like that for Trump, that would be and that could also then have an impact and implications in New Hampshire coming up
totally
in a few weeks after that. So, well, that's your little look into the caucus system, boys and girls. Professor Kelly and Professor Hancock are going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst, U.S. launching Tomahawk missiles into Yemen, going after the Houthi rebels. We'll talk about that. And Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's surprise surgery that nobody seemed to know about. That's coming up next, right here on KMOX.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
That guy over there is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly, and we're going to the Quiver River Electric guest line, where we're going to be visited by Colonel Jeff McCausland. He's CBS military analyst. Colonel McCausland, top of the morning to you, sir.
Hey, top of the morning to you guys. It was great fun being with you there in St. Louis a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we love seeing you and your brothers. And, boy, you're back to work and lots happening. I guess this has been building for a bit, but the United States and some of our allies lashed out against some rebels inside of Yemen as a result of attacks they've been making on many of the ships out at sea.
That's absolutely correct. You know, the Houthis, who are located there in Yemen and took over control of the country back in 2014, have been conducting attacks against international shipping passing through the Red Sea since about November. And on Monday this week, they conducted the largest attack so far, where they launched 18 drones, one ballistic missile, and two anti-ship missiles, one of which was actually in the direction of a U.S. flag vessel full of jet fuel. And obviously, if that vessel had been struck, there would be tremendous loss of life and also interrupt shipping even further. So in response, the United States, in concert with other allies, most notably Brits, Australians, Dutch, and Bahrain, and the United Kingdom, conducted a response attack using F-18s and missiles against sites that the Houthis use for launching these particular weapons against shipping, as well as radars, et cetera. But I think the important thing to underscore in that regard is this is not so much a U.S. versus the Houthis response. This is an international response. And it came also in the aftermath of a U.N. Security Council resolution, which had passed condemning the Houthis for these attacks and calling on them to stop. And even the People's Republic of China and Russia, though they abstained on the Security Council from that vote, did not veto or did not oppose that particular vote.
Yeah, the Houthis are interesting. They're obviously backed by Iran, supplied by Iran. Not clear whether they're directed by Iran, I think, at this point. What kind of, and Yemen is undergoing all kinds of turmoil and has been for years. What kind of footprint do the Houthis physically have that we're able to bomb it?
Well, the footprint, of course, is those installations for launch. We've been monitoring those places for quite some time. And in fact, this is actually the second time we've done this. There was an attack by the Houthis against international shipping back in 2016. And in response, the United States had a cruise missile response, and that was the end of that particular episode. But so they have that particular military capability, you're right, derived from Iran. They are a client or a proxy of Iran. How much total control the Iranians have over the Houthis, though, is problematical. And that's important to think through, because now, of course, the ball is kind of in their court. What are you going to do next? Are you going to now cease and desist? Are you going to escalate and perhaps consider Houthis making attacks against U.S. naval vessels, for example, or allied naval vessels, or U.S. military forces in Saudi Arabia, or back at Saudi Arabia as well, because there's a fragile ceasefire that exists between Saudi Arabia and the Houthis, which has gone on following a war that went on for 8 or 9 years. How they respond now, of course, is the critical question.
Yeah, and let's assume, I think, that the Houthis are going to step up their assault. And I guess we've been intercepting their missiles and drones fairly successfully over 100 times. But assuming they keep this up, what's the next play for the U.S.? Is there no likelihood that we're going to actually send troops on the ground to take them out, or might we?
Well, I think it's doubtful that the United States would conduct a land operation into Yemen. We want to stay away from that as possible. I think what we'll see is a tit for tat, at least on airstrikes back and forth. But, of course, one never knows based on how these things work out. The Houthis are a client of Iran, but not necessarily under full control. They might respond in a massive fashion. Their rhetoric seems to suggest that's what they want to do. If they struck a U.S. naval vessel, if there was significant American loss of life, then obviously, you can make your own deadly scenario of how that escalation might then occur.
Colonel, this one may be a little bit uncomfortable, but the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, wow, what a really crazy story this week that's going on. You think he's going to keep his job?
Well, I think it's problematical. I mean, based on the man's health, let's just begin there. Lloyd Austin, who I happen to think a great deal of, I don't know him well. We met a couple times when I was in the Army. He is highly regarded in military circles, but he's 70 years of age. He has had this job as Secretary of Defense for 2 years. It obviously is one of the most stressful jobs you can have on the planet Earth. Now he has a significant health problem, and as a consequence, there's a real question whether he'll maintain that job because of his health issues. If you're the Biden administration, you have to be concerned with all the different issues that are going on around the world. If you have a senior cabinet member, particularly a Secretary of Defense, who's having a health challenge, might that be cause for a change? Furthermore, if you're the President of the United States right now, politically, you're starting an election year, do you want the possibility of your Secretary of Defense being forced to step down or actually stepping down because of health reasons and having to go through a confirmation hearing? And then my guess is the President would like to avoid that. But it remains to be seen, but I think we have to start at the very beginning, and that is what this means for his ability to perform it based on his health.
And the Secretary of Defense is the tip of the spear. And when you talk about military actions like last night, for example, I mean, that's as important a job as exists in our country.
That's exactly right. And the fact, in this particular case, let's be candid, that the Secretary, a very private man, had not informed his deputy initially of what was going on, that he was going to be incapacitated, had not informed for a number of days the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Brown, and frankly had not informed the President of the National Security Advisor. Now, that is certainly worrisome. Now, to his credit, and what I've seen transpire so far is Austin has accepted responsibility that, that it was, in fact, his responsibility to make sure that those notifications occurred. But we are where we are in this particular process right now. As a consequence, I think we're going to see two things happen. One is the Pentagon is now going to conduct some kind of review of the protocols. That's the way bureaucracies react, number one. Number two, there's going to be calls on Capitol Hill, a few for him to resign, certainly more for an investigation. I'm sure he'll be at least called up on the carpet by the relevant oversight committees for some type of a hearing. But this is something that if you're the administration right now, with everything you have going on around the world, in the Middle East, Ukraine, a big election tomorrow in Taiwan, that you really don't need right now.
One thing our listeners and we have in common here, Michael, is that we always benefit from the thoughts of Colonel Jeff McCausland, the CBS News military analyst. Colonel, have yourself a great weekend. Thanks for your time and your insight.
Take care, guys.
Dive into all things Cardinals on Cardinals Conversations, your go-to location for exclusive content from KMOX. Catch it on the Odyssey app or your favorite podcast platform. Stay connected with your team. Cardinals Conversations, where the Redbird talk never stops.
Hey there. It's
the best weekend of the year.
It is. We've got
wild card weekend.
Mm. Yeah, and it's going to be cold, so it's going to be a perfect weekend to like put some fire, you know, in the fireplace there if you've got it.
Yes,
I don't.
I do.
Turn the heat up, you know, getting some good food. I'm going to make chili for Sunday. So on Sundays, I get together with a regular group of single people.
Yeah.
Who we have our Sunday night dinner.
Yep.
And it typically revolves in the wintertime around football, so we'll get together around 3-4 o'clock and have a bite to eat, and it's all over by 6:30. You go home, watch the last game. But I've decided that I want to make chili this weekend.
That sounds good.
But I would like to do a meatless chili.
What?
Have you ever done like a red meatless chili? I'm open.
What's the matter with you, Kelly?
What do you mean?
There is no chili without meat.
Yeah, it probably is essential to have meat. But I've made veggie chilies before. I've made a seafood chili before.
Well, that's meat. I mean,
yeah. So I guess that's where I'm going. I'm looking at maybe. Have you ever had a turkey chili?
No.
I'm thinking of making turkey chili. And you think that's crazy, huh? Well, you know, like they make turkey now that's like ground beef.
Yeah, that you right. Can,
oh, you
so
know,
you ground turkey.
So I brown some turkey up, throw it in there.
If you're gonna do all of that, why wouldn't you just put hamburger in the darn thing? That's what you put in chili. Hamburger.
But I'm trying to consume less red meat this year.
Well, it's not, you know, it's chili.
Yeah,
it's not red meat.
But well, yeah, I could do like a white bean chili, like a, you know, have you ever had that a white bean chicken chili?
Chicken chili's okay. Yeah, I've had chicken chili, but it's, you know, why not do the classic? You know, I mean, it's a wild card weekend.
You just splurge.
Yes.
Have the red meat.
Yes.
But see, this is how New Year's resolutions get broken, though. You got bad friends that say to you, so I'm trying to limit my consumption of red meat.
That was a New Year's resolution.
It was one of the things I'm trying to work on. I don't know that I have a resolution. My resolution is to try to, like, you know, just be healthy, et cetera. And one of it is that all that red meat's not good for you.
A little red meat in the chili's not going to kill you, Kelly.
Yeah.
And it's wild card weekend.
Okay.
Make the chili so that everybody can enjoy it. And, you know.
But I bet if I made a turkey chili, you wouldn't even know that it was turkey.
I would know it was turkey.
I bet you wouldn't.
I would know it was turkey.
No, you wouldn't.
Of course I would know it was.
How would you know?
Because it doesn't taste like chili.
Oh, well, this is going to taste like chili.
It's not going to taste like chili.
Do you like spicy chili or regular chili?
I like regular chili. I'm not a big spice guy. What do you put, like jalapenos in your chili?
I could put a little jalapeno in there. Yeah.
Disgusting.
It's good stuff.
I'll tell you what I'm aggravated about. I mean, like, fed up to here with.
What's this?
Peacock.
What's your problem with the bird?
It's not the bird. Peacock is where you have to buy, a subscription or whatever to watch the game against the Chiefs and the whoever they're playing.
Peacock chili. That just came to my mind. Maybe I could get peacock chili.
Are you not?
No, I am aggravated too. Like this whole. I hope. The NFL, who literally owns media, right?
They're playing Tampa Bay, right?
Right.
Baker Mayfield.
No, the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, they're playing the Dolphins.
It's going to be 0 degrees
That's
in Kansas
exactly
City.
Right.
To watch the game, you're going to have to belong to the subscription service called Peacock.
Peacock. Who's
now,
ever heard of it?
It doesn't make any sense to me, and I hope they get the lowest ratings ever for a playoff football game because they've chosen to go to this stupid
one. And that's tomorrow night, right? That's the night game
it's
on Saturday.
7 o'clock tomorrow night.
On Peacock.
Yeah.
What does that cost?
I don't know. But just
James, what does that cost? Do we know what Peacock is?
I would imagine it's like every other streaming service out there, but imagine this.
Uh-huh.
What about the bars and the restaurants that would be showing that game on a Saturday night? They're not going to have Peacock streaming.
Well, they're going to have to.
But how? I mean, because, you know, whenever you stream in a place like that, you pay a higher subscription rate than you pay if we were just doing it at your house or my house.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah, because, you know, like when they have those fights and stuff, they have to pay at a larger per-person rate.
I wonder if the kids have Peacock, and if so, can I pirate the game?
Well, first of all, you should. I would imagine most of your stuff is being pirated by your kids.
Well, you've spoken the truth there.
They will probably say to us, well, Dad, the only reason I would have Peacock is because you have Peacock. Do you have Peacock?
I don't have Peacock. Never heard of Peacock until this silly game comes up. You know, I do think, seriously, I think we're getting dangerously close to a place where all of our sports viewing is going to be pay-per-view.
I think you're right. Well, I think it's all going to be owned by Apple or Amazon here
or
soon.
Or the leagues themselves mm-hmm. are going to set up a subscription.
I did it this year. I signed up for the NFL Red Zone, and it's called the NFL Ticket. And the whole reason I wanted it was for the Red Zone, and the Red Zone is the constant you know, scoring stuff. And it was a little bit more than I wanted to spend, but, you know, we probably had 10, 12 weekends where, you know, it was what we watched on Sunday, so it may have been worth it.
You're not 50 yet, so you remember, do you remember a time before cable?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I used to be the remote control in my family's house, you know, then get up there and go change the channel to channel 4. Go to channel 2. Go to channel 11. Remember those days?
Yeah, well, I remember those days. And then when cable came along, I remember my dad, he said, this is never going to work.
People paying for
people
television.
Aren't going to pay to see for television.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm maybe my belly aching about these pay-per-view subscriptions is just rooted in old age.
I think they've made a strategic error here, because it's one thing if Peacock was free, but it's a subscription-based streaming service.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah. And, you know, okay, on Thursday nights, they were running a game on Prime or Amazon. A lot of people weren't watching those games because maybe they don't have Prime
or Amazon.
Mm-hmm. But to take this is their premier product. This is when the NFL makes its money. To take one of them off of one of the major networks doesn't make any sense. Now, I can't watch the game even if it was on NBC because I have DirecTV right now, and they have one of them goofy fights going on with these. That's the other problem with these streaming services, right? They were supposed to make our lives easier. You're going to be able to pick what you want to watch. It's going to be cheaper. You're not going to have to put up with 3,000 channels. You'll be able to pick your channels. So then you go sign up for one of these subscription services that has your channels, and then guess what? Billionaires get in fights with billionaires, and you and I have to sit and look at a screen that says, we're out protecting you. No, you're not.
Yeah, I'm not happy about these developments, but we will have the game right here on KMOX.
That's right, because it's a Kansas City Chiefs
game. Yes, and we'll have the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus, bringing the play-by-play. So who wants to watch the stinking thing on Peacock?
I'm not watching it on Peacock. I'm listening to Kansas City.
I'll tell you what's coming to town, Michael.
What's that?
You want some real athletic entertainment.
What's that?
The All Elite Wrestling League is coming to St. Louis in a week or so, and we're going to be joined in studio by the great powerhouse Will Hobbs.
You think we can take him?
No, we can't take him.
He's 270 pounds.
Yeah,
I think the two of us together may be able to put him in a corner.
I could sit on him, but it wouldn't last long. Will Hobbs is next on KMOX.
Rich Orris hosts the KMOX Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. Saturday at 11 on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. We have in studio with us powerhouse Will Hobbs.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. We're talking powerhouse.
He's 6'1", 270 pounds, and you were talking smack about him.
Why would you pick
a fight with this guy? Because look at this man.
Powerhouse is in the house, Mike.
Hello, Mr. Hello, Powerhouse. How are you?
Doing?
So you are with the All Elite Wrestling, which is coming to St. Louis here on Saturday, January the 20th. You can get your tickets at AEWTix.com.
That's right.
It's going to be at the Chaffetz Arena in downtown St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
It's also going to be live on TNT.
Yes, live on national television.
And you're going to be there competing.
I will be there.
How long you been a wrestler?
I've been doing it for about 12 years. I've been with AEW for a little over 3.5.
So you look like you're what, in your 30s or so?
Yeah,
and so were you addicted to wrestling as a little kid?
I wouldn't say addicted to the to wrestler, I would say obsessed.
Obsessed?
With the growing up.
Now, most wrestlers have a famous move or a catchphrase. So you're the powerhouse,
yes.
And it's clear and evident why you're that. Because
yeah, look at him.
I think
his
you
biceps
could
are bigger than
knock
my legs.
Down walls if you wanted to.
I could. You know, they call me Little Hulk. So
the Little Hulk.
Yeah.
So what is the powerhouse move? What's your signature?
A spine buster.
Hey now.
So it's
what's
a,
that?
Famous by the legendary Arn Anderson,
uh-huh.
who's part of the Four Horsemen.
Oh.
With a Ric Flair.
Ric Flair.
Yes.
Woo!
Exactly.
So I'm guessing that it has something to do with you picked them up and slammed them via their head first on the ground.
Spine to the pine.
Spine to the pine.
I break backs.
It breaks the man's back out there on the wrestling mat. It's unbelievable. All right. You're born and raised where?
I was born and raised in East Palo Alto, California.
All right.
Oh, yes. The right, mean streets, huh?
And now you travel all over the country performing every week. And you're going to be in St. Louis on the 20th.
Yes.
It is broadcast on TNT, but folks can get tickets at aewtix.com. Walk me through the evening. What will I see if I'm sitting out there in the third row?
You will see, you probably may have some sweat fly on you.
Oh,
so you know, it's a family-friendly show, action-packed. You'll see all different types of wrestlers, for high-flying, power wrestlers. You know, you'll get pyro.
Pyro?
Yeah.
Pyro will be in the house. Powerhouse is in the house, and pyro.
No, yeah, pyro means there are going to be fireworks going on. Oh, I thought that was fire and power.
It's hard for me. That could be your name. We can introduce
I
you
could
as pyro.
Be pyro, yeah, because I'd light up the place, I guarantee it. Wow. And who will you be wrestling a week? Do you know yet?
I won't know yet, but wow. I feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
Are you currently a belt holder?
No, I'm a former TNT champion.
Former TNT champion. So you're climbing your way back up. You're going to run this whole place.
I'm
going to
get some gold back around my waist 2024.
How long do you think your career is going to last? I mean, you can't do this forever, right?
No, obviously not. You know, I have maybe, you know, another 15, 20 years, maybe.
Wow. Who was your hero growing up?
Oh, man, I had so many.
Yeah.
We go from Mr. Perfect, you know, obviously.
He's talking about me again.
No, that's what my wife calls me.
I got to wrestle one of my favorite Sting growing up.
Sting.
He's still wrestling,
still
huh?
Still wrestling.
Wow.
Still wrestling.
Wow, you know, that
His last match will be March 3rd.
Really? My birthday. That's wonderful. Oh, Sting's last match birthday. Is on my birthday.
You know, he's going to be here singing with Billy Joel, too. It's incredible what that guy can do.
He is something. What a talent.
And so you're going to be wrestling. Now, this is until the 20th, so you're running around the country. Where are you headed to next?
I'm headed to just in Jacksonville this past Wednesday. Now I'm headed to Virginia this evening. We have a collision tomorrow.
Saturday. A collision, I would imagine anybody who runs into you is a collision. Yeah.
Yes.
I can't imagine how much food you eat alone.
I eat. I don't even keep track. I just eat.
Really? Did you get some barbecue here when you were in town?
I need to.
Yeah, you do. You need to take him over to Pappy's and get him some good food.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
So we did a food tour last night.
Now I'm looking at you, and I asked you before we got on the air, I want to announce, what do you bench press?
625.
625 pounds, folks.
That's not possible, is
it? That's very possible.
Yes.
Yeah. When you look like me, anything's possible.
Well, hey,
there it is.
There's that Mr. Perfect
and,
coming out.
Yeah, yeah. And you work out every day?
At least 5 days a week.
5 days a week in the gym.
What's a typical workout? How long is a workout for the powerhouse going to go?
About an hour and a half.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Little biceps, little triceps, little pecs.
It depends on what my schedule looks like.
Yeah.
You know, I have a program that I follow.
I bet we're on the same regimen.
I think so.
Don't you think?
I'm about to bust out of your shirt.
Yeah, well, it happens.
I'm about to bust out of mine, too, but down a little lower than yours.
Now, you wear the traditional wrestling garb when you wrestle,
singlet,
huh?
Singlet, yes.
What a call?
A singlet.
A singlet?
Yes.
What's a singlet?
Do you get to choose what you're going to wear?
I do. I pay for it. I pick it out. You know, it's got some nice little crushed velvet on it.
Ooh.
You know, so.
Huh. Crushed
velvet. Yeah. Yeah, I look good when you go out there.
Have you had any significant injuries during your career?
I have shattered my left thumb.
Oh,
okay. I have it surgically repaired.
Ooh.
I've had multiple twisted ankles, you know, bumps, bruises.
Yeah. How long does a twisted ankle take to repair itself? Because I had one.
There's no.
It could be weeks, right?
So in this business, we're year round, there's no off season.
Yeah.
So, wow. You know, there's times you got to just tape it up and go.
Are you married?
No.
Nope. So you're a single man running around wrestling.
Well, I mean, I got kids. I'm a dad. So
you are a dad.
When I'm home, I'm dad.
How old are your kids?
My kids are 18, 5, and 3.
Oh, wow. So, cover the gamut there.
So when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And he would jump and stuff. So when we were, I would watch him on Saturday mornings, and I would be on the couch jumping. My mother hated it. Were you the same kind of kid? You were doing the exact same stuff?
Same exact thing.
And who encouraged you to go finally do this, or did you just have to...
I had to do it. I didn't have any encouragement. I had more people telling me I couldn't do it. Excuse me, worse than I can do it. So,
did you just start locally there in Oakland?
I did. I'd always bet on myself.
Good for you.
Well, he is Will Hobbs, powerhouse Will Hobbs. You can watch him for yourself at the Chaffetz Arena coming up on Saturday, January the 20th. Doors open at 6 o'clock. Get your tickets at AEW. TIX.com. It is the Collision Tour for the All Elite Wrestling League. Will, thanks so much for your time.
I appreciate you guys.
Have a great flight out to Virginia, and we'll see you in a week.
Yes, thank you.
Get that barbecue.
Oh, yeah, definitely, before you leave town.
Hey, guess what, pal? That's it for you and I, but we're going to stick around with Chris Ronge. He's going to come in here in a little bit. Amy, of course, is jet-setting. So we'll be back with Chris Ronge after this right here.